the producers.
Part two, Mike Crank, Trevor Shand is coming at you. A quick note, I wanted to just be extra clear. The guys sent me some awesome demos of some of their latest stuff. I kicked off part one with Trevor and only Trevor stuff, which I may have indicated differently in the interview. This is part two, which will kick off with Mike Crank and only Mike Crank stuff. I did not edit this stuff. I have put every single second of demo material they gave me because a lot of people love to hear that stuff. So there it is. Here comes part two, kicking it off with a Mike Crank demo. Don't forget, part three kicks off with an extra special Trevor Shand bit. And we do get a little more technical, talk about their gear and some of the stuff they like to use in part three. So if that's what you like, well, you'll have it there.
Hey, Jack. Little ditty about Jack. Can you play that song, the guitar and the drum? Thanks.
September 10th, hands will rock. Let's get the rock out of here. And roll.
Are you excited?
It's Jack's.
Are you excited? 666 show.
Featuring Death Leopard. The bloodthirsty vixens of heart. Ever fear. Drama-rama. Sir Mix-a-Lot will tempt you into sin. And watch out for razor blades buried in the Marcy playground. Jax.
666 show.
Jack FM.
There's nothing odd about this bunch of songs in a row. Just go back to sleep, crazy lady.
Jack.
It's Jack FM's new 2012 Volkswagen Baja Beetle. It's got a sweet stinger tailpipe, and you can win it.
Yeah, Jack, I just wanted to congratulate you on having the worst radio station in L.A.
Jack, do, all I really want is Jack.
When you win everything in the Jack FM Man Cave, then it's your rules, hombre. Like this one. It's acceptable to tap a beer from your new kegerator. You can tap the Xbox game controller, but you certainly cannot tap your married neighbor.
Jack FM in Culver City, huh? There goes the neighborhood.
It's Jack FM's Man Cave. Complete with everything from a 54-inch HD TV, Gibson guitar, and a kegerator to a PlayStation 3, Pearl drum set, and a toaster.
Hey, this is Bob from Anaheim. Bob. And, I will cut you, Jack. Cut you
off. That's like a knife.
The following bunch of songs in a row would like to formally apologize for the drunk text it sent last night.
Hey, Jack, this is Lisa from Riverside.
It's Heather from Pomona.
Hey, Jack, this is Joe drinking at the pub.
Hey, Jack, this is Matt from Hesperia.
This is Brian from Emmett.
I am everyday Jack.
I'm going to bring up the book right now. There's a few things that I wanted to talk to you about the book, and then I want to get into some of the tech stuff, just so people kind of know where I'm going with this. I'm going to bring up this book. I'm going to talk about it in a second. But then I am going to ask you guys lots of technical questions, because in the book you say you love to talk about plugins and settings. So, but I'm not kidding. I am going to ask you that stuff because people do want to hear it. But let's start. This book is awesome. I want to say that to begin with.
Thank you very much, man.
I reread parts of it last night, in fact, because I had finished it a couple weeks ago. First, just tell me about how long did it take you guys to write it?
I would say, you know, in total, we had talked about ideas that we were going to put in this thing for a good 2 years, you know, that... Well, let's put that in the book. Let's put that in the book. And we would talk about it, and neither one of us was writing anything. So finally, I just started writing stuff, and then I pass it to Trevor, and I go, here, do you add to it, change it, just, you know, let's get this thing rolling. And it just sort of took off from there.
Yeah,
and
Mike
Trevor, go ahead, Trevor.
I was just going to say that Mike was pretty much the architect of the book. I mean, he would come in and, yeah, say this, and I would write something and send it to him, and then literally a couple months would go by, and all of a sudden there'd be kind of this compilation of all the stuff that he had put all together and said, hey, look how far we've gotten now. And it just continued like that month after month until one day it was like an entire book that he had, you know, brought into this the room. And I was like, oh, wow, this is what we've done? This is amazing. Yeah. It was pretty cool.
The name of it, Brain Dead Creative Help. Brain Dead Creative, Mike, was that kind of your deal before Trevor came along, or is that both of you?
We were talking about, like, what are we going to name this book? And, you know, I was like, well, we should look at it like a handbook. It's not really, you know, this, you
it's
know.
It's not a novel or
right,
anything.
Right, yeah. Just flip to what you think is important and throw out the rest is kind of our idea. And so we thought, you know, well, it should be about help some way. We, you know, it's our idea. How can we help people? How can we give back to radio yeah. And kind of help influence the next generation like we were influenced. And so what can we do? And then we always talked about how sometimes we would sit here and try to come up with ideas, and we're like, man, we're brain dead, man. I don't can't come up with anything, you know? So when you're brain dead, you need some creative help. And that's sort of how it all came about. And Trevor, actually, he came up with Brain Dead. And I said, cool.
Well, it's crazy because this job that we all have – you're making stuff that becomes dust literally in a week, you know, and the turnaround is so high. It's not like we're making movies and they're staying and the legacy lives on. Imaging is always changing. The promo's there one day, gone the next. You're only as good as the last thing you've done. And no one's I feel like not enough people have really addressed it or had that open dialogue where, you know, what is it like to work in an environment like that? How do you keep that pulse going and the trials and tribulations of that that we all struggle with?
I'm just going to say this, and either one or both of you can define it for us. It's in the book, but box of noise. Get into that.
Come on, man. You know what a box of noise is. You've heard a box of noise on every single demo you've ever heard. There's always, you know, you're going to find the box of noise.
Well, the thing is, at some point in radio history, I don't know when it was, but imaging became, well, let's put our call letters over top of crazy laser sounds, and that is apparently imaging. And that and that's supposed to really stand for something, and I just don't. That's where I find a box of noise. What is that saying beyond to any tech heads in radio or industry people? How does that affect a listener? What does that mean to someone who's passively listening in their car? Is that getting anyone's attention? Does it mean anything? Especially in these days when you have such little time to make an impact and to get into the hearts, really, is what we're trying to do of an audience.
Yeah, and I'm as guilty of it as the next guy.
Yeah,
I mean, too. I have years of imaging with box of noise underneath. In fact, some of the stuff you'll hear is you know, you throw a bunch of sounds together and you bark over the top of it, and it's not really, what is that doing? What is that saying? What is that?
I have a question about this, and I legitimately don't know the answer. Is it, okay, do imaging guys continue to utilize the box of noise because program directors want it, or because that's all they know? Why does it continue to happen? Because I agree in that I don't really see the real value of that whole box of noise scenario to the listener.
Yeah, I mean, I find that my personal feeling is that Jack FM is a key example of imaging done really well. There's not, and a lot of it, there's not all that much going on sonically. There might be a little stinger to separate the when the voice, when Howard Kogan, the voice of Jack FM, starts talking from the music as a little breaker in between things. But then you'll even have just a normal, just a low-key music bed with him saying something that's really well written. They got a team of writers, you know, who are plugged into the news of the day, who are doing topical things. And that stuff, I feel, is real imaging.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I do feel what you say. There's a lot of programmers and stuff, and I think it's kind of old-school thinking, and that's part of why we decided to write a book to try and spark something, you know, because I do think it's old-school thinking. It's Radio 101. It's very inward thinking. It's just industry talk. It doesn't mean anything, I don't think, to anybody outside of the radio industry and the kids who are doing the box of noise and all that stuff. It's kind of like, you know, you do have a lot of tech people who are kind of like a guitar virtuoso kind of people playing a flashy solo. But what about the song? You know, and I think that that's kind of gotten lost in all of us. And it's something that, again, me and Mike aspire to get away from in our daily stuff. We still go back there. It's a tendency that we're trying to get rid of. But
I think, too, you know, we're fortunate here at CBS in Los Angeles that we get to be just creative guys. And we know that there's so many production guys that they're the creative guy. They're the afternoon drive DJ. They're the commercial production guy. They're in charge of a promotion. They got to go do a remote on the weekend. And so we know that these guys need to throw stuff together as quickly as they can. And what we hope is that, you know, just like they're going to care about what they say in their air shift, they're going to care about how they deliver that information in a promo or in creative imaging or even writing creative for a commercial. And that, you know, if we can start saying things creatively and that reflect our listener and make them laugh or make them think or, you know, make them look at the radio for a second, then I think we've hit the nail on the head versus if we've just panned, you know, the voice guy left and right a bunch of times with stutter effects, which is cool. I'm not saying it's not cool, but, you know, does it have to happen every single time?
And I will say that the environment that we walked into here at K-Rock and Jack is a pretty special one, whereas at one point there was three people imaging two stations, and that's all. We didn't have to worry about commercial production or anything like that, and that is something that is so super rare and something that has allowed us even to kind of think in these terms, and it's something that we're trying to share.
Now, I guess tell me to what extent I am correct by this statement, but you wrote this book as equally for program directors as you did imaging directors.
Well, my feeling is that it's for anyone in radio or broadcasting or is interested in being creative or is a DJ or is a general manager. In my opinion is that why not look at the perspective of what production guys are thinking? And I hope that we reflect what not just we think about radio, but what a lot of production guys think about radio. And, you know, that was our hope, and that maybe we can help be the sounding board for that. You know, maybe we can help these guys go, well, look, these guys are talking about it too. And we want to try to move the image of radio and the whole brand of radio and what the brand means and what's important about why it's interesting to people, you know. And
did you guys give a copy to Kevin?
Of course.
And did he read it?
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah. He read it before anyone else did. He was the first one to read it, and that was a couple months ago. Yeah,
I could see how, you know, he would be a program director. I don't know him, but he's somebody obviously I would like to meet at some point in my life. But you know, he'd be the kind of PD that you guys wish other programmers would aspire to be like. You know, to let guys be creative, take the time to write. Anyway, my point is, in reading the book though, I don't want to say this in a negative way, but it seems like you're taking a little bit of issue with the way program directors handle their stations, and you're trying to get those points across often throughout the book.
Well, I would say that listen, we obviously don't have all the answers, but the main purpose of the book was to kind of shake things up a bit and to inspire more so of a dialogue of kind of next level thinking across the board, and to get, you know, say some crazy, you know, give some crazy ideas that have actually worked here, and, you know, kind of tell other people that I don't know, be open to that kind of thinking. Mm-hmm. And to this, you know, to forging this new awakening of the radio industry, you know, that's happening right now.
Yeah, I think we wanted to get across that, you know, we've had our situations at radio stations where we've kind of had to fight to get things on the air. We had to convince program directors to let us do stuff. And I think that we're just kind of, you know, trying to parallel our experience with what other people have done. And I think it's cool if PDs get to hear that side of the story, because I think a lot of times they don't. They, you know, guys like us don't go down to the PD's office and go, here's why I think things suck, or here's why I think we can change this. You know, instead, the PD says what we have to do, and we do it. And a lot of times that turns into a box of noise.
What I've noticed with PPM, and a lot of people don't want to say it, I think people are afraid to say it, but program directors are basically saying, shut the hell up even more. The music is what gets the listeners to go to the station most, so get more music. Okay, so there's this battle of creative versus more music. Now, PDs might say it's less creative, and you might say, well, we need to have more creative. How does one win that battle? How, if a PD is simply telling you, shut up, make the sweeper 3 seconds long, and get to the next record, you know, how do you, what are we doing to get ourselves a little more creativity on the air?
I think if you've got 3 seconds, make it the greatest 3 seconds you can possibly make. And I also think that a lot of guys who get to be creative imaging guys and work at some of their favorite radio stations all across the country did it because they broke the rules. And so if you've got 3 seconds and you know that you can do something awesome in 15 seconds, do the 15 seconds and play it for the program director. Make them sweat a little bit. Let's see if we can change things. That's sort of the point. Let's try it. Why not at least put it in front of them, let them say no.
And if anything else, with all this PPM thinking and, you know, and some program directors obviously reacting to it, just like you said, shut the hell up, let's play the music. It, for imaging producers, it's actually a really exciting time because more than ever, a lot of the creativity is left to the imaging, and you know, there's certainly more standing behind it, you know, and it gives us a great opportunity to kind of figure out new, really cool ways of saying a lot in very little time.
So another thing that I think about is, you know, if you've got a guy out there who's a great imaging producer, you know, he is talented. That's not in question, but he's in a situation where he feels like his PD absolutely does not want theater of the mind, does not want anything that doesn't say call letters and frequency. And that's, you know, what can a guy do? I mean, besides just simply producing something and playing it, you know, are there other kind of ways guys in that situation can go about getting more creativity out there?
That's a great question.
That's something. Well, that's the big question.
It may have been a bad question too.
I think it's a great question because I think a lot of guys are stuck in that position, and you know, there's lots of multimedia to think about too. You know, we all have radio stations that are streaming or trying to stream or posting videos and posting stuff. You know, maybe this is an opportunity for imaging and creative people to come up with something interesting that, just like you have a podcast, Ryan, that people can make these interesting pieces of production that are downloadable from your radio station's website. Maybe look at things from a different avenue other than just your frequency.
One thing that we're kind of told, you know, and that we tell ourselves on a daily basis is just to try and do things constantly that have never been done before and to not really look back and always look ahead. To erase all the tools that we have at our disposal and try and really create the next thing, the thing that people are going to copy. You know, like when John Frost did what he did, a whole school of producers kind of went in that direction and he pioneered this new path. And we need that that sense of pioneerism, you know, again. And that's the answer that's going to come out of that question that you asked.
Aside from what you guys are doing there, because especially, you know, being in a situation like you are, you do have a platform unlike anyone else in the world, much less America, for the type of things you can put together and the type of stuff that can hit the air. But do you have any other places, radio stations, obviously, that you're hearing some cutting edge stuff that you guys have turned to? Or do you still kind of have the mentality of you don't listen to too much other stuff anymore?
Well, I hate to put it that way. It's not like, you know, we just shut out the world and, you know, we're creating what needs to be created and everybody else too bad. That's really not at all what we hope. There are definitely some guys that I think really stand out. There's one dude, Ned Spindle, who I think is just an incredible writer and is able to do those kind of theater of the mind type things, you know, and he's really great, and he takes the opportunity to write some cool, interesting stuff about it. And it's not just, you know, I think he's asking that question: how can I put this information out there quickly and with as much entertainment as possible? So, I mean, yeah, we definitely hear stuff that we're like, wow, this guy's really good, or you know, he's on his way, or you know. So, I would say, you know, it's not like we definitely don't have all the answers.
Right. No, it's true. I work with a lot of different clients and stuff on my own as well, and I've been exposed to amazing copywriters, and I think a lot of the talent and skill that we're seeing in these new generation copywriters, these young kids, are people who are kind of growing up out of the world that this new media has kind of created, and I think it's incredible, and I think more thinking along those lines is what has to happen. You know, people have to be more open and receptive to these young kids coming up with these outstandingly left of center ideas. I find a lot of awesome stuff also in the world of podcasts and these people coming up with imaging who've never been to radio school, and they got GarageBand or whatever pieces of software came on their laptop, and they're making their own stuff without any preconceptions of what it's supposed to be. I think that stuff's super exciting. So there's a lot of it going on, definitely.
How much of the book was, I guess, how much of the book was written by each of you? Did you guys actually sit around and then kind of finalize it together, or did one of you take the reins on that, or did you hand it off to someone else?
It really is. Every idea that's in there is something that Trevor and I would talk about. So, sure, there's parts where I wrote on the computer most of it, but okay. There's parts where he wrote on the computer most of it. But they're all ideas that Trevor and I talked about all the time. And so, like we were saying before, you know, we would talk about stuff and go, hey, we need to put that in the book. So, you know, that's where it would start. And I would write stuff and hand it off to Trevor. And then he'd write stuff and hand it over to me. And we'd kind of each sort of massage out the way it was going to be. And, you know, and then he had some great articles that he was writing for that magazine in Canada. I'm like, let's see if we can get the okay to put those in there. Let's do that. Let's put them in there, because that's all the stuff that we talk about all the time.
This is the stuff at the end of the book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually have saved a few of those. I haven't read them yet because I wanted to, you know, I don't know. I wanted something left over to read in the future, you know?
Yeah, it was basically like, yeah, I would get a copy of the book at one point and I would go over the whole thing beginning to end and literally take a word out or take something out that, and then we'd talk about it and then he'd take it and look through what I put. And it was literally back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah. And there were days where I'd get an email and Trevor would be like, okay, I want to add this to, you know, the brand chapter or whatever. And I'm like, okay. He goes, yeah, I wrote it on my iPhone. So I'm like, oh, great. Here's all this autocorrect I got to fix.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know.
Almost everything I sent you, I think, was on iPhone, standing in line at Disneyland.
Well, yeah, why do you keep talking about hookers in this section? Yeah. Oh, that's not hooker, that's an iPhone, damn it. How important in your minds is that? We touched on this before, but to kind of either be your own person and not pay attention to what other people are doing, or is it important for us to actually pay attention to what other people are doing, especially in the realm of radio imaging?
I think it's important to be aware of what other people are doing for sure, but I also think it's very important to keep a good balance and to not totally radio geek out on it all the time, and don't, you know, so when you start surrounding yourself in it 100% day in, day out, I think you have a tendency, at least I do, to start thinking too much radio business inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I go and go to Disneyland or crazy places like that where I go for inspiration and just kind of live life and be with my family and watch movies, those are the times when I come back with really fresh, different ideas. And I think that that's the most important part, and one of the most important things we can do is people who have to create on pretty much a daily basis.
And, you know, even on the Jack FM side, there's a group of writers and we all contribute to these writing things for
writing,
like,
orgies.
Yeah, like writing orgies. Yeah. Exactly. Like for different nice. Categories, we have like the bunch of songs in a row or playing what we want. And we just write whatever to sort of, you know, mention these things. And there's so many times where we go, that's so inside. And it's because the average listener is not going to know that these are the radio geeky things that we're talking about. So that does happen a lot. And Trevor's right. Like, just sort of getting out of the studio, get out of the office and, you know, shut your brain off for a little bit. And that does wonders.
Yeah. You are what you eat. And that pertains to creation as well, you know, and to really break down walls. I think that's the secret right there.
And writing is a major focus of the book. Tell me the most interesting thing you ever wrote, or if there is at least one thing that stands out in your head that you never got on the air that makes you sad inside? Oh. is there something like that, that for either of you?
Something?
Okay. You got piles.
Yeah, there's
that.
Piles of that stuff.
What about like the number one?
Gosh.
It would almost be like a writing regret, you know, like I made that and it never saw the light of day. And, you know, that could have been my Mona Lisa or whatever.
I don't think anything that usually when the stuff doesn't get on later on, I can usually look back and say, OK, all right, I see. Anything really great anyway that I feel has made it through. But yeah. There's no Mona Lisas in the pile.
Nope.
There's good stuff, but I don't think any Mona Lisas.
Yeah, there's stuff that even, you know, we might even hear again later and go, I can't believe that didn't make it. But it's never something that I'd be so proud of I'd throw on a demo and send it right off to the world of, please listen to this.
Those things are the things that you'd go in and stand behind and say, no, come on. But usually when you have it in your head, like, wow, I'm so proud of this. This is my Mona Lisa. You know, people are going to think the same way. Your PD, anyway, is going to think the same way. You know, when you have that feeling in your gut,
right?
Your heart always will tell you.
Just like when Trevor said, you know, I'll go back later and I'll listen. I'll go, okay, I understand why. There's things that we fought for and got on the air, and in the same vein, we hope that they said, okay, I understand why. You know, because we went in there and fought for it.
In the same, since we're talking about great writing. And since we're just waist deep into part two now, hey, Mike, let's play some of your early work, shall we?
Oh, great. It's going to be terrible.
I love it. I asked you guys for that stuff early, and it was both. It's always the same response. Yeah. All the old stuff, worst ever. Tell us a little bit about what we're hearing. When's this from? How old is it?
Oh, okay. It's old, man. First of all, it's old. It's from when I worked in Springfield, Missouri, which was my actual first full-time radio job. And what I loved about working in small market Springfield, Missouri, is I got to do everything. I got to be a DJ, do production, do promotions. You do it all. And so this is a promo from that era. I think 1996, maybe 95.
Cool.
Hey, bunghole.
This is cool.
Yeah, you.
I think there's a problem here.
Shut up and listen.
Shut up, Beavis.
Want to see the new Beavis and Butthead movie?
This is going to be cool.
Channel Z gives you the first chance to see Beavis and Butthead do America.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Listen for the location, Butt Munch.
Whoa.
Then go get your tickets.
Cool. Yeah.
Thursday night, December 19th at midnight, the show starts.
Some people are dumb.
Okay, Dillweed. Friday morning at 12.
I am Cornholio!
Join Channel Z for the premiere of Beavis and Butthead Do America at the Campbell 16 Cine this Thursday night at midnight. Get your free ticket to Caveman in the Fremont Shopping Center today, starting at 10 a.m. There's a limited number of tickets, so get there early.
Channel Z.
All right. So there it is. Epic award winning Mike Crank 1996 Springfield, Missouri production. Well
painful.
Done.
Painful.
I have something from my KCSU days. You may not even be aware what KCSU is, Mike. Trevor, you certainly aren't. But that's the station in Fort Collins that I worked at while listening to The Peak out of Denver.
Cool.
Yeah, anyway, dug up some old stuff of mine. I will never play it. I will
Right now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to listen to Ryan Dring. Go ahead and set this up for us, Ryan. what are we about to hear from your KCSU days?
We are going to hear nothing from my KCSU days. The beauty of being the guy who runs this podcast is I don't get... Yeah, I didn't bring it up because I really actually wanted to play it. No, I'm literally not going to play it. But I know the feeling.
Email Ryan Dreen to get him to post all of his KCSU stuff on his website.
You know, there actually might be one thing floating around somewhere on there that I put up like 7 years ago. I don't know what page it's on, but anyway, not the point.
The point.
I wanted to tell you, Mike, I told you I'd gush on you a little bit, but you know, everybody's got kind of some of those people that they heard when they were younger. And you were kind of that guy for me. You were at the peak. I loved the imaging, and then especially the stuff you would do for Rover's show, because I could tell you guys were getting extra creative there. You had the leeway to do it. So it's your fault that I'm in professional radio. Thank you.
I am so sorry. And I'm honored, dude. That means a lot. And then you sent me a really nice email about that. And I was flattered and blown away by that. It means a lot.
Yeah. I figured I'd just let you know that officially on the podcast. But it was just funny. You know, what is this? 11 or 12 years later? That was like 99. And suddenly this guy, Mike Crank, that I listened to his stuff with his buddy Trevor Shan, wrote a book. I'm like, well, look at that.
Cool.
Well, you know,
I'm glad I could inspire you then, and it really, I do want to say that again. It really meant a lot to me that you wrote that really nice email, and you know, in no way was that production my best, and for you to be inspired by it is really awesome, and thank you.
It was good stuff. Well, anyway, Trevor, I know. Are you all right over there? I don't want to leave you out.
No, I'm doing good. I'm enjoying this.
No, this is good. Back to me. Yeah. So you loved me for how long?
Yes. It was. It was. Those were the days. Those were the days. And then I went off and got myself a job doing, like you said, like 37 different things at seven stations in Market 240. And it was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing I tell a lot of the young kids. You know, I get to speak at one of the broadcasting schools here in Southern California. I always say, if you don't have a reason to stay here, go to a small market and go do it. It's, I would never trade that time that I worked in Springfield, Missouri at Channel Z95 for anything. It was a great learning experience, and I loved it. The producers.